ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins as well. Dwayne, good morning.
Good morning. I'm just very excited that today is one of those rare days where there actually is a game where you can say it's men versus boys.
Oh, Man Young Bucks United is playing. Versus Young Boys. It's Man U versus Young Boys. Yeah, exactly. And Man U should win because they've been playing decently. They beat Juventus at home. That was still surprising a few weeks ago.
Unless they're playing Crystal Palace at home. I don't know if we want to have more Jose Mourinho conversations because the world is saturated with them. But I fully support Mourinho's lifetime appointment as Manchester United manager, and my Manchester City affiliation has nothing to do with that that credit that I'm giving him.
So, are you feeling like it's the real life, your real life dream, your fantasy of playing football manager with United to try to get relegated? Do you feel it's happening in front of your eyes?
I don't think they're going to get relegated, but there was actually an article that was being passed around city circles today on my city Twitter, which is a longtime United person that is just bemoaning the fact that it's depressing to watch them battle for a Europa League position, and the city fans are going, like, cry me a river. We were in League One a few years ago, so there you go.
All right, today on the show, we're going to talk about news and Champions League, a few news. We'll do like a rapid-fire news section. We have a few different type of news to talk about. Some considers local football, some is international football, some is the business of football, and then we're going to get into the Champions League preview for today. There's games today, tomorrow, and then on December 11th and December 12th, and as well tomorrow at noon, Canada, Mexico, for a place in the U17 Women's World Cup. It's going to be interesting. We'll watch that tomorrow on TSN. But let's start the show, Dwayne, by talking about the USL. The championship has a union.
Yeah, and this is a sign. I think it's a good sign for there's a couple good signs about this. The first one is that not only do they have the players have unionized, but it's in support of the league. So this isn't a adversarial sort of situation. I mean, by its nature, unions can be adversarial. I mean, that's their job, is to stand up for the workers' rights as opposed to the owners' rights. But in this particular case, the league recognizes the need to have a singular voice from the players. And it's such a sprawling, crazy league that it's hard to sort of get one voice from them. And there's so many different levels of standards between teams in that I think it's really especially important that leagues like the USL have some kind of player representation, some kind of player voice. We talked about this with the NWSL last week, that it's almost when the stakes are lower, the need for when the stakes are lower, the need for a union is higher, because there are certain basic things that need to get protected for these players for this league to really reach the next stage, Kevin.
Absolutely, which is playing environment, infrastructures, regular paychecks. It might seem silly, but this is going to be a big deal for a lot of players that are not necessarily names or not recognizable names in USL. Now they'll have maybe more of a security behind that paycheck that a union can give you. And we've talked about this a few months ago when an article came out to talk about the disparity of the haves and have-nots in USL and how some teams are fully professional and some teams are barely fitting the semi-pro tag. So no, this is going to be very useful for the players in the USL, especially for the 36 teams that will be in the championship starting next year.
Yeah, and look, the sort of the impetus to this was the death of the NWSL. I think we can safely say that the league is not coming back at this point. It's a league in lawsuit only now.
NASL. You said the NWSL. Yeah. NWSL is alive and well. But the other acronym of four letters, NASL, is dead.
The North American Soccer League, or as I like to refer to it as the Lawyers Soccer League right now, because that's really the only place it exists is whatever league. Every so often, my Twitter feed will blow up with all these legal briefs, and it's all about the NWSL. the North American Soccer League, trying to have you know, relevance again. I think the Arena League, which starts next week, and we're going to have some content on that soon, folks. Some exciting content on that later this week, and I have some tickets to give away too. We'll tell you how that's going to work soon. But
the Metro Stars, nonetheless, Mississauga's own, Mississauga's very own. Metro Stars.
And you guys let us know how much coverage you want of that. I don't, you know, it's hard to, I'm not going to promise like daily coverage of the Arena League, but we might be able to get some here and there the offseason.
It's the first Canadian team in the Major Arena Soccer League. There's a few Canadian players playing across the league, and one famous one from Quebec who plays for the Florida Tropics, which is Federico Mugen. But no, there's a lot of players from our neck of the woods, and a certain Mo Babouli is going to play for Metro Stars, so that'll be fun.
And we might have an interview set up with Mo finally. So that's we'll see how that works out. We're trying to arrange the details of it. But anyway, back to this. Another thing too, Kevin, we didn't really mention that it's really important. Like the fall of that league is what was the impetus to this is because they wanted to protect their basic income. Like to have the league fall under their feet is not what they want. But stuff like healthcare is important too. Like if a player gets injured, you want some protection that they're going to be able to take care of them. I know with the Super League in England, they changed their stratus of women's soccer, the women's football, I guess, over the last year to try and create two professional divisions. And one thing that they really want to, that they're pushing forward there too, is that teams have to guarantee that they won't cop players if they're injured for more than 3 months. That's the type of stuff that players only think about, that we don't think about as fans that much. Like if you get hurt, you don't want to lose your job. And a union can help protect you, that a sports union can help protect that. And that's stuff the USL's players of the union will do.
Which in labor laws is illegal. If you look at it outside of sports, example, in my day job or your day job or any day job, if I slit a tendon or if I break an ankle, whatever the case may be, if I injure myself while doing my work duties, I'm going to be covered for as long as I can work. And if that is not the case for pro athlete, there's a problem because it is their day job. And if an athlete breaks their ankle, breaks a clavicle, tears a tendon in a ligament in a knee and is out for a year, you have to still make a living. And you were injured in the duties of your job, so you should be insured. You should be covered. You should get at least part of your salaries like normal workers around the world. It's not necessarily around the world, but you know what I mean. Like normal workers do. Workers' comp, basically.
Yeah, and workers' comp is a term that we use in Canada that's provincial-based. In the United States, I assume that it's similar and that it's state-based. So these league teams are all over the place. You want a universal policy that no player can lose their contract because of this. You have to guarantee their income for a certain amount of time. And we get that the USL, I don't think that these players are going to be striking for big salaries. They'll just be striking for like minimum requirement stuff and for, you know, having hotels that don't have cockroaches in the floor and things that, you know.
A hotel with electricity and running water, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's basic stuff so that there's kind of a universal, like, there's universality across the league, and that's something that you're going to need to grow, you know. And for those of the people out there that dream about the possibility of the pyramid ever opening one day, and I hate to go down this road all the time because of, well, you know why, but if you dream of that, then this is a good, it's another incremental step towards eventually getting to that kind of place, because you're going to need a universal standards across your lower leagues if you're ever going to open those lower leagues up. And again, this is years away from it happening because they did not set the structure up that way. But if we're going to get there, this is a required part of it too. And, you know, I think there's lessons, if you want to turn this into a Canadian conversation real quickly before we move on, there's lessons to the Canadian Premier League as well, that they should probably be thinking about this type of stuff immediately and not create an adversarial relationship with the players and immediately start encouraging them to create their own voices so that you create a partnership between players and leagues in a way that helps the sport grow, so that the owners are feeling that the players are hearing what their limitations are and that the players are feeling that the owners are hearing what their concerns are, right?
Yeah, which is one of the big aspects to this as well, and is the first point mentioned in Stephen Goff's article, which you can find on the Washington Post, is minimum salary. And that's a big, big, big one for USL players too. A minimum salary, there's not necessarily a figure, but you would think it's between 30 to 50,000. If the basic salary in Major League Soccer is $55,000, you would hope that in the USL it would be just above the living wage, hopefully. So 30 to 45,000 at least, I imagine, probably around 35 will be the minimum salary in USL if it goes according to other standards across the world of second divisions or third divisions around the world.
Yeah, and look, you could, with a union now, you could work some stuff into that, that maybe it's the equivalent of 35,000, so that teams...
Yeah, with insurance and everything. Yeah, sorry, you're right.
With insurance, or if they're in, you know, Toronto TFC 2 won't be in the championship level next year, but for their players, for instance, maybe if TFC provides free accommodations in the city of Toronto, which would be a very expensive
just
proposition.
Just that is over 30,000, Dwayne. Yeah, you know the rents exactly. are in Toronto? $2,000 a month, Jesus.
Yes, well, yeah, I don't pay that much. But yeah, it's yeah, you can get, for sure, if you're providing those kind of intern values or, you know, a car or a health insurance in the United States. I think there's ways to be creative about that so that these players are meeting the standards that both allow the teams to provide them with the right value to allow them to be professional athletes and allow the players to be professional athletes, because that's a big part of this. You know, if you want the sport to grow too, you want to have structures that allow young players that aren't quite at a fully professional level to continue playing. And if they don't have standards, a lot of them are going to go, you know what, I have an engineering degree. What the hell am I doing? Right? We're going to talk on Thursday about all the cuts for the Canadian teams and the Canadian players in the league on our Two Solitude show. But Clint Irwin was let go of TFC because they have a backup keeper that they were happy with at the USL level this year. At any rate, that keeper has a degree in engineering. And he said this in this article that was put out in earlier this year. It's like, well, I can always just quit and make twice the money in my chosen field, right? My dad said he can get me a job like that, but I'm chasing my dream. But I don't know how much longer I can do it because I got a wife now.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to continue to grow, you need to.
And I was going to say an example to what you're saying is, every year that he decides to chase his dream instead of making that six-figure salary as an engineer, it's wages that he'll never probably see again unless he makes it big. And really big in the world of soccer, and that's something to think about. It's true.
Yeah, and you know, this is exactly, this is even more underlined on the female side of the game, where often the salaries, even if they do meet the top level, are not big enough to justify chasing the dream for even a year. Whereas at least these guys can justify it because maybe they might make a quarter, maybe they might become Jonathan Rosario one day. You know, if you haven't made it by the time you're 20, you're not going to ever become Sebastian Giovinco. But you know what? You got a late bloomer could become a Jonathan Rosario. So you can justify that, and it benefits the whole system to have these guys making a decent wage to allow them to take care of their nutrition, to allow them to have decent medical care, to allow them to only focus on their game and to not worry about paying rent. That's what this is about, and it's about keeping these guys in the game for as long as they feel that they're still active and as long as the league feels that they're still useful. And that's really what sports should be about, not about finding ways to pay your rent by going to like three camps of, you know, on top of your job. I don't know if people remember Grant Wall's book, The Beckham Experiment, back from 2008. That's the early days of MLS, really. It's MLS 1.0. And the Alan Gordon in that, if you haven't read it, go back and find it. It's probably at a used bookstore somewhere. It's obviously the Beckham stuff's outdated, but the Alan Gordon stuff really applies to what it's like to be a lower level soccer player right now in the USL. The MLS is sort of caught up, so it's not really their experience anymore, because what's the minimum salary in MLS is a mid-class living right now, right? Yeah. So they're not the same. But back then, the minimum salary was $10,500, and that's kind of what these USL guys are facing. And you read what Alan Gordon was doing. He was living on his girlfriend's couch, I believe. His girlfriend was a nurse, was kind of taking care of him. He was working three or four camps on the side. Like, how can you possibly get to a higher level when you're doing that? And maybe Alan Gordon, who's a decent poacher to this day, you know, I don't know if he's cut or not. I haven't seen whether he's still around, but he's certainly had a very long career. Who knows how high he could have went if he wasn't facing those things back then.
Imagine if you can actually train and work on your craft instead of working, period. It makes a big difference. All right, moving on to other news on topic of the day. Zach, it was reported by Paul Tenorio on The Athletic last evening. Zach Steffen will probably be moving to Manchester City, a transfer between $7 and $10 million. And then Zach Steffen, goalkeeper of the Columbus Crew, will probably be loaned out for next season and next half season, and we'll see after, to a partner club. And the names that are coming out are either Girona in Italy, or Nice as well, has been seen, talked about, and who knows where he's going. But yeah. Man City will buy Zach Steffen.
Yeah, Girona's La Liga, by the way. But La Liga, Nice one. Yeah, Nice is an interesting one. That's Patrick Vieira's club right now as well, and he'd be well aware of Zach Steffen very much from having played him in Major League Soccer. Apparently, and it's probably because of Vieira, City's had him on their radar for a long time as what would be, in their mind, a value buy. He plays the game with his feet very well, which is what we all know Pep values in his keepers. Obviously, you know, Joe Hart can tell you that, right? Longtime legend of the club, was forced out pretty quickly because he couldn't play with his feet. And, you know, they're pretty set right now in goal for a while. But by and large, this would be a depth play. Zach Steffen probably doesn't want to be a backup at this point. He probably thinks he can go ahead. But, I mean, Ligue 1 or La Liga in the lower tier would be a definite step up for him, and a definite value to the U.S. national team. I think Steffen, he is the keeper of the future. Yeah. And the problem with City is, you know, they might be willing to keep him there, play him he could probably get loaned down to their under-23s a little bit, even if he's a little bit older, because they do have some provisions for that. But they don't call it the under-23s, it's the EDS program at any rate. He might be able to get work like that, but I think there's some issues with the work permit, because he probably hasn't played for the U.S. national team enough yet to be considered an automatic international at a top-tier international team. And is the U.S. still a top-tier international team? Aww. They are by ranking, but that's another debate for another day. But there's some issue with that, but apparently the work visa situation is a lot more lenient in Spain and France, so that might be why he ends up there in the beginning point. And that'd be good for him. I mean, there's a lot of people that get so upset when teams get, or when players get bought by the big clubs and they don't get played. They worry about them going on or not getting an opportunity, and some people think that they should just stay in MLS, but I think it's kind of silly even at this point of MLS's evolution to think that Nice isn't a better option for them than the Columbus Crew. And I'm sorry I say that as the biggest advocate of MLS as you can find.
It's a nice option. See what I did there? But no, I agree.
The French guy did that, not the English guy.
Of course. Okay. I'm the captain of puns on this show.
There you go.
One thing I really think it needs to be talked about is Greg Berhalter's work on this issue. He got Zach Steffen for free, Dwayne, a few years ago. Like $0, free transfer. He already knew he was a valuable keeper, and when he was available for nothing, he's like, well, I'm going to get him. And he eventually won the starter job in Columbus, and then you're able to sell him for $7 to $10 million. That money for the Columbus Crew is life-changing, especially for next year. It's a lot of money.
It's their biggest transfer ever.
Yeah, and it's going to pay for one-third of the stadium or one-third of the renovations that are eventually going to happen or whatever. It's a lot of money that they can use at this very juncture of their existence with all that happened with the Austin thing. You know, it's a good timing for that. It's a shame they're losing one of the best ever players and the best probably keeper in the history of the Columbus Crew. But that money between the 7 and 10 million U.S. dollars or euros, I think it's euros, so it's even more. So, you know, it's a lot of money, a lot of influx of money to revamp your roster, to revamp infrastructures if you need to put a new paint of coat, a new coat of paint on the stadium if need be until you get a new one. Whatever the case may be, that money comes at the right time for the Columbus Crew.
No, for sure. And look, Claudio Bravo, which is Manchester City's current backup, has been less than fully successful as a signing. He was terrifying. He still is terrifying to most City supporters when he's out there. So I'm not completely convinced that they don't see Steffen as not a long-term project, but more of a short-term polishing and then immediately be moved up to be the backup at the top level. Whether you want him to be the backup is a question or not. Although I will say this, that Bravo does play, and typically City's backup does play 10 to 15 games a year because they do play a lot of games because they're in multiple competitions usually.
I'm going to say he's not going to play in the Champions League or the Premier League, but he'll play a lot of cup games. He'll play FA Cup, La League Cup. he'll play whatever other things that they can and play with the reserves too. So still a lot of games at that level. The first team plays what, around between 45 to 60 games a year, depending on how far they go in competitions. You'll find places to get your backup, some playing time, and some development time too.
Yeah, and look, I would imagine a training session with Manchester City might be as intense as, you know, a game against the Colorado Rapids in July anyway.
Probably more. I would focus on more, but that's on the Rapids, not the training session.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, no, I think it's a good move for both for all three parties, really, because I actually, as I can speak as a City fan now and someone who knows Jack Steph, and I'm sure that a lot of City fans are going, who? But,
what?
You know.
An American keeper? What are you talking about? You want to look at this guy play.
Yeah, he's a good value, probably an upgrade to Claudio Bravo after a little bit of polishing, after he gets used to the being in Europe, being away from the United States, and then it's a good shout for what to City is pocket change and what to Columbus is game changing money, right? So it works out for everyone.
The other news I wanted to talk to you about quickly is the rumor now that this January the Chelsea. The club that I'm wearing a jersey right now for that reason, is going after Christian Pulisic of Dortmund, U.S. men's national team captain last time around. And they're Mauricio Sarri is thinking he's the perfect man to replace Eden Hazard. So it means Eden Hazard is probably leaving for Madrid because they need reinforcement. He's probably leaving, unfortunately, in the next transfer window, but means that Christian Pulisic might have a bigger spotlight shown on him if he goes to Chelsea in the Premier League. Not that it's a higher level. Dortmund and the Bundesliga, it's a very high level. They have a chance of winning the title this year. But it's still more viewers and a bit more of correlation of viewership right here in the United States. And he might become a household name in the U.S. with this transfer.
I think is he a household name? That's a good... You mean like people might be shouting about him on ESPN shows at 5 o'clock in the afternoon? Yeah.
Like Joe from Montana, who watches 2 games of soccer U.S. men's national team per year, he heard the name but doesn't know really. With NBC's coverage of the Premier League, guess what? Joe from rural Montana will know who is Pulisic.
Bob from Boise. No, yeah, it...
He's also
fallen behind the young English player Sancho and on Dortmund's depth chart right now. There's a lot of Dortmund fans that are screaming for him to get more playing time because they want both of them to play. But he hasn't been getting as much playing time at Dortmund as Americans would like. So maybe he's stagnated a little bit there. But I'm of two minds from a Pulisic's perspective. I think that there's value in him battling to get that playing time. And certainly at Dortmund playing for a Bundesliga title. But, you know, if a Chelsea move is there, as long as you have some kind of guarantee from Chelsea that you're not going to immediately get loaned out to a team that's worse than Dortmund, which, you know, Chelsea has the famous loan army, then certainly it's a good move. Now, the other stuff I hear from some of my American people that I talk to and some of the American mainstream stuff that's available for anyone to listen to, some of the worry is that this is just his agent making noise to try and boost his value up. And look, he's at the point of his career right now, I think, where still very young, but he's been in the Bundesliga long enough that they kind of have an idea of where he's going to be. High quality player. I think probably going to be the best player the United States has ever produced. I don't think there's much debate about that anymore. I think he might even be the best player the U.S. has ever produced right now.
Yeah.
Certainly, and the highest level,
you would think. Because at 18 years old, playing in the Champions League, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's at a level, but, you know, we have the same conversations, and I've had conversations with people on and off the record about Alphonso Davies in the same way, that Alphonso Davies, I think we can pretty much guarantee, is going to be a top 1,000 player in the world. And Canada's never had a top 1,000 player in the world.
Top 100, you say?
No, 100 or even 1,000. When you think about how many players there are in the world, that's still, you're getting into the top percent 2%, of the top percent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
But to get into top 100, to get into top 10, these are different kind of conversations. And, you know, at some point when you become 17, 18, 19, 20, people start to figure out where you fit. Are you a regular starter on a Champions League contending team? Are you a starter on a Champions League participating team? Are you, you know what I mean? And like, we're finding that level with him right now. And this is part of that process. And I think battling for time, at Dortmund is the better solution for him. But I'm not thinking of his pocketbook when I say that. His pocketbook might have a different answer, and that's another consideration that really doesn't matter on the football side.
No, exactly. And by the way, if you want to know more about Christian Pulisic behind the scene, his father has a podcast. So who said podcast was dead? No one, actually. It's growing ever before, like never before. But Mr. Pulisic has a podcast. So to finish the news aspect of this show before we move on to the Champions League kind of preview for today, Dwayne, something we figured was going to happen in Orlando, the Orlando City Soccer Club has fired GM. Let me just read it so I can get the name properly. Niki Budalic has been fired from Orlando City. Yeah, that's a predictable move.
Yeah, and it's the right move.
Jeez.
I mean, you know, look, but you can't fire ownership, and that's the problem right now in Orlando, I think. So until they sort of demonstrate that they are willing to allow someone to put a project in play that has the right experience and know-how to do it, i.e., and I always bring this analogy up because it's the right analogy, just like TFC was not trustable until they demonstrated that they were willing to let Bezbachenko and Manning and Vanny do what they needed to do without any meddling. Until they did that for a year or so, no one was willing to say they were a contending team. And it wasn't probably until midway through 2016 that people were like, okay, maybe they know what they're doing now. And so the same thing's going to happen in Orlando. They've earned the mistrust. And firing a GM is the right move because he clearly, well, the results speak for themselves. The table doesn't lie. He clearly didn't get the job done, but they still have a culture there that is a little bit troubling. A culture there that, you know, I have heard a little bit insider of from talking with people close to Lauren in the past and kind of know some of the stuff that was going on there and some of the players' side of that debate and why, you know, he's not quite the villain Orlando fans want to make him up to be when it comes to that. You know, there needs to be a big self-reflect in Orlando. And is this part of it? We'll see. And I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it's all set. It's ready to go forward now until I see what they do and how they act.
Yeah, and we'll see this starting next year, and we'll see who the GM is in the next few months. Let's move to Champions League preview. 8 games on the schedule for today, 8 games tomorrow. It's match day 5 of 6. Ajax versus Ajax. CSKA Moscow versus Victoria Plzeň. Roma, Real Madrid, Lyon, Man City, Juventus, Valencia, like we mentioned earlier, Manchester United versus Young Boys, Bayern, Benfica, Hoffenheim, and Shakhtar Donetsk. Dwayne, in those 8 games, which ones will you watch?
Well, I mean, let's put City Lyon aside because we all know.
Of course you're going to watch that one.
Yeah, and I wanted to make, because you always make the puns, I was going to make an Ajax-Ajax kind of pun, because Ajax, for those who don't know, is a cleaning supplier, so I was going to say that.
And it's
Ajax
a team in the York 9 region.
Yeah, so there you go. what game out of that? Juventus-Valencia is an intriguing. Valencia, of course, is having a very good year. And, you know, this is Juventus is maybe the favorite right now to win this based on form, based on Ronaldo.
Yeah, I was going to say
just
Ronaldo.
Based on Ronaldo, isn't it?
Yeah, everything is based around Ronaldo, I guess, unfortunately.
The other game, my second screen game, though, I think would be Bayern-Benfica, but it has to do with just Bayern and what the hell is going on there and trying to see where Davies might fit in and whether or not he has a chance to get put onto their Champions League roster at the end of that. I do think the Lyon City game could be interesting because Lyon beat City and is the only team to have beaten them this year, period, end of story. So that's kind of an intrigue there, and City can clinch the group with a win there. Roma-Real Madrid, again, Real Madrid, what the hell? 3-0 they lost in the weekend.
Yeah.
How? Well, and they're only 6 points off.
And it's not, well, yeah, but it's not just Madrid, though. Barcelona, too. Like, what's going on with those two clubs? I think we're going to have to do a show about the La Liga eventually because what's going on with the top-tier clubs in La Liga and Real Madrid, of course, is... So you remember that sign a few months ago where the kid was like, who needs Ronaldo? Yeah, you need Ronaldo. Who needs the quicker mark? You do.
Quickie Mark, exactly. Simpsons reference for the win.
Yeah.
Although Barcelona 10 points, fine in their group right now. They're playing tomorrow. I can't wait for the knockout stage of this because I said that during the last group stage game. These games are getting worse. They're like boring somehow. Like, you understand they're big, but the big teams are pulling away, and that's part of this impetus towards the Super League that's out there, because there seems to be a greater and greater gap. But once these giants start playing each other, then that's when we all go, oh, this is why we love the Champions League. And you know, and then later on we go, oh, this is why we half-ass pay attention to the Europa League when it gets to the quarterfinals. But
yeah, it's true, because half of the teams we're watching today and tomorrow will be in Europa League.
Well, yeah, I always find that actually when it gets to the end, that is the interesting battle to see who will get those Europa League spots out of this. And I look, I'm not dismissing the Europa League. I think it's a valuable competition, but for a lot of clubs, no one wants to be in it. It's just like, it's kind of interesting in that way. It's like the League Cup. Like, you don't necessarily start your season looking to win the League Cup, but the deeper you get into it, the more you're like, oh, well, I might as well win the League Cup. Same with Europa League. But yeah,
okay, we're in the quarterfinals, semifinals, might as well win it.
I do think, to be serious though, that I think they need to look at this format a little bit. It's a little bloated right now. I kind of like the idea of them creating this third level that UEFA has talked about, as much as people were cynical about it. I think that there's a benefit in that, and we've seen the benefit of that firsthand with the Nations League D, to have something for those lower teams. But I think you've got to counter that by reducing the field in the actual Champions League to be a little more
16-team knockout tournament, one loss, you're going home. March Madness style in the Champions League, that's what I would do. No home and away series, no group stage, 16 teams. You win, continue. You lose, you're done.
I don't disagree. I might be willing to go to 24 teams and have a 24, that works. I'm trying to do the math in my head. We'll have a one round where... what teams are, well, you have the top eight teams in the world, or top eight leagues in the world, get their champions get an automatic buy into it. Yeah. And then you have the next 16 UEFA coefficient leagues playing off to fill out the other eight spots. And then you go straight knockout from there. That's kind of how I do it, to get more countries involved. But
I agree. Yeah, that's a good way. But you know, the amount of interest that every single game would have because of the no tomorrow aspect of this. Yes, it's very North American way to looking at it, but guess what? A lot of the MLS Cup playoffs are probably going to be in that format next year. There's a lot of talk of why dragging things so long when Juventus, Madrid, Barcelona, or Man City is going to win it. We all know it's one of those ones, or Juventus, you know? So why string people along? Just make it a... Imagine the upset if one team is able to beat Man City in the quarterfinals of a knockout tournament. You know, it would be amazing. And that upset actually feels like an upset because you eliminated that team. And I'm just using Man City. It could be Juventus. It could be anyone else. Madrid. Imagine you're Valencia, okay? And you're in a knockout tournament. Madrid's on terrible form. And you're playing them right now in a knockout game for the Champions League. It might be in the round of 8th or whatever, the round of 16th. And you beat them, and you continue, and you have a win that you can keep for eternity, that you just eliminated Madrid from the Champions League on a one-off crazy game that you scored the winner at the 92nd minute. That's how legends are created.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think back even this year. What did I just say? Man City was scoring for fun. I did the math the other day. They have more goals per game than 21 of the 31 NHL teams. Think about that for a minute.
Yeah. So the goalies have been terrible this year.
Yeah, it's exactly. But they lost to Lyon, and that was in a Champions League game. And Lyon is a team that, you know, that Manchester City might draw in the first round of this 16-team Champions League. So, yeah, exactly. It would create the intensity. And I think it also reduced the strain on these players, and that's an important consideration that doesn't have a financial or even a sporting aspect to it, other than the fact that the games that they do play would be better. I do think you need to start thinking about that thing, and the players are starting to make noise about that. So you get all of these games, you know, for the big, big clubs, the clubs that have a lot of players that are playing in summer tournaments, you get them not playing in the fall. They can hold back and play their first team lineups in January forward, playing off to a final in the end, and it would be, you know, beneficial. I don't think for financial reasons we'll ever see something as straightforward as what either one of us are proposing, but something reduced to take into consideration the players and get rid of dead road. Like, Monaco's in this stupid thing here now, and Monaco's look barely good in Ligue 1 right now. So, yeah.
I agree.
You know, so.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on those games today. We'll preview tomorrow's game tomorrow as well. And let's not forget, tomorrow noon, Women's World Cup U17, Canada versus Mexico in the semifinal. And the other semifinal is Spain, New Zealand. Both winners will meet in the Women's World Cup final, U17, on the weekend. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie. Oh, yeah, by the way, Copa Libertadores final will be December 8th or 9th in a neutral site. Paraguay, Miami, there's a few options being studied right now, but we just wanted to give you an update on that before we say goodbye. We'll have more on tomorrow's show in the world of soccer, world of football with a soccer perspective at 24th Minute, at Soccer Today SPN, at Kev Laramie. Until tomorrow, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.